kindly. By the time Nynaeve managed to take a sip of her tea, it tasted stale, and the sweetness almost curled her tongue. Janya apparently really did believe young women liked lots of honey. The morning passed slowly, very slowly.
"This is taking us nowhere," Delana said at last, glaring at Nynaeve as if it were all her fault.
"May I go, then?" Nynaeve asked wearily. Every drop of sweat that drenched her seemed to have been squeezed out. She felt limp. She also wanted to slap both those cool Aes Sedai faces. Delana and Janya exchanged glances. The Grey shrugged and walked over to the sideboard for another cup of tea.
"Of course you may," Janya said. "I know this must have been difficult for you, but we really do need to know Randall Thor better than he knows himself if we are to decide what's best. Otherwise everything could turn to catastrophe. Oh my, yes. You've done very well, child, but then I never expected any less of you. Anyone who can make the discoveries you've made with your handicap, why, I expect nothing less than excellence from you. And to think—"
It took quite a while for her to run down and let Nynaeve stagger outside. Stagger she did, on wobbly knees. Everybody was talking about her. Of course they were. She should have listened to Elaine and begun leaving all the so-called discoveries to her. Mugedian was right. Sooner or later they were going to start probing for how she did it. So they had to decide what was best to avoid catastrophe. No clue there to what they intended toward Rand. A glance at the sun, almost overhead, told her she was already late for her appointment with Theodrin. At least she had a good excuse this time. Theodrin's house, hers and two dozen other women's, lay beyond the little tower. Nynaeve slowed as she came abreast of the one-time inn. The gaggle of warders out front near Gareth Bryn were evidence the meeting still went on. A residue of anger enabled her to see the ward, a close flat dome mostly of fire and air with touches of water, shimmering to her eyes over the entire building, the knot holding it in tantalizing fashion. Touching that knot would be as good as offering her hide to a tannery. There were plenty of Aes Sedai in the crowded street. Now and then some of the warders moved back and forth through the shimmer, invisible to them, as one group broke up and another formed. The same ward Elaine had failed to penetrate, a shield against eavesdropping, with the power. Theodrin's house stood 100 paces or so farther up the street, but Nynaeve turned into the yard beside a thatch-roofed house just 2 beyond the former inn. A rickety wooden fence enclosed the tiny plot of withered weeds behind the house, but it had a gate, hanging on one hinge that was nearly all rust. It squealed murderously when she shifted the gate. She looked around hastily. No one at any of the windows. No one in the street could see her. Gathered her skirts and darted through into the narrow alleyway that eventually ran by the room she shared with Elaine. For a moment she hesitated, wiping sweaty palms on her dress, remembering what Birgitta had said. She knew she was a coward at heart, much as she hated the fact. Once she had thought herself brave enough. Not a hero like Birgitta, but brave enough. The world had taught her better. Just thinking of what the sisters would do if they caught her made her want to turn around and run to Theodrin. The chance was vanishingly small that she could actually find a window on the very room where the sitters were. Impossibly small. Trying to work some moisture back into her mouth, how could her mouth be so dry when the rest of her was so damp? She crept closer. One day she wanted to know what it was like to be brave, like Birgitta or Elaine, instead of a coward. The ward did not tingle when she stepped through. It did not feel like anything at all. She had known it would not. Touching it could do no harm, but she flattened herself against the rough stone wall. Bits of creeper clinging to its cracks brushed her face. Slowly she edged along to the nearest casement window, and nearly turned around and left right then. It was shut tight, all the glass gone, replaced by oiled cloth that might let in light but certainly did not allow her to see anything, or hear anything, at least if there was anybody on the other side, no noise escaped. Taking a deep breath, she inched to the next window. One pane had been replaced here, too, but the remainder showed a battered once ornate table covered with papers and ink pots, a few chairs,
and an otherwise empty room. Muttering a curse she had heard from Elaine, the girl had a surprising stock of such tucked away. She felt her way along the rough stone. The third window was swung out. She pressed her nose close and jerked back. She had not really believed she would find anything, but Tarna was in there. Not with sitters, but Shiriam and Mirella and the rest of that lot. If her heart had not been pounding so hard, she would have heard the murmur of their voices before she looked. Kneeling down, she moved as close to the casement as she could without being seen by those inside. The bottom of the window rubbed against her head. "Sure that is the message you wish me to carry back?" That steely voice had to be Tarna's. "You request more time to consider? What is there to consider?" "The hall," Shiriam began. "The hall," the Tauren voice scoffed. "Do not believe me blind to where power lies. That so-called hall thinks what you six tell them to think." "The hall, it has asked for more time," Baonin said firmly. "Who can say what decision they will reach?"
"Elida will have to wait to hear their decision," Morvryn said in a fair imitation of Tarna's icy tone. "Can she not wait a small time to see the White Tower whole once more?"
Tarna's reply was even colder, though.
"I will carry the hall's message to the Ammerlin. We shall see what she thinks of it."
A door opened and closed with a sharp bang. Nynaeve could have screamed with frustration. Now she knew the answer, but not the question. If only Janya and Delana had released her a little sooner. Well, it was better than nothing. Better than, "We will return and obey Elida." There was no point staying here, waiting for someone to look out and see her. She started to ease away, and Mirella said, "Perhaps we should just send a message. Perhaps we should simply summon her." Frowning, Nynaeve held her place. "Her who?"
"The forms must be met," Morvryn said gruffly. "The proper ceremonies must be followed."
Baonin spoke on her heels in firm tones.
"We must meet every letter of the law. The smallest slip, it will be used against us."
"And if we have made a mistake?"
Carlinia sounded heated for perhaps the first time in her life.
"How long are we to wait? How long dare we wait?"
"As long as need be," Morvryn said.
"As long as we must." That from Baonin. "I have not waited this long for the biddable child just to abandon all our plans now."
For some reason that produced a silence, although Nynaeve did hear someone murmur "biddable" again as if examining the word. What child? A novice or accepted? It made no sense. Sisters never waited on novices or accepted. "We have gone too far to turn back, Carlinia," Shiriam said finally. "Either we bring her here and make sure she does as she should, or we leave everything to the hall and hope they do not lead us all to disaster." From her tone, she considered that last a hope for fools. "One slip," Carlinia said coldly, even more coldly than usual, "and we will all end with our heads on pikes."
"But who will put them there?" Anaya asked thoughtfully. "Elida, the hall, or Randall Thor?"
Silence stretched, the skirts rustled, and the door opened and closed once more. Nynaeve risked a peek. The room was empty. She made a vexed sound. That they intended to wait was small consolation. The final answer could still be anything. Anaya's comment showed they were still as wary of Rand as of Elida. Maybe more. Elida was not gathering men who could channel. And who was the biddable child? No, that was unimportant. They could have 50 schemes weaving she knew nothing about. The ward winked out and Nynaeve jumped. It was past time to be gone from here. Scrambling to her feet, she began dusting her knees vigorously as she stepped away from the wall. One step was all she took. She stopped, bent over with her hands frozen over the dirty spots on her dress, staring at Theodrin. The apple-cheeked Domani woman met her gaze, not saying a word. Hastily, Nynaeve considered and rejected the fool claim that she had been searching for something she dropped. Instead, she straightened and walked slowly by the other woman as if there was nothing to explain. Theodrin fell in beside her silently, hands folded at her waist. Nynaeve considered her options. She could hit Theodrin over the head and run. She could get back on her knees and plead. Both notions had a good deal wrong with them to her way of thinking, but she could not pull up anything in between.
"Have you been keeping calm?" Theodrin asked, looking straight ahead.
Nynaeve gave a start. That had been the other woman's instruction to her after yesterday's attempt to break down her block. Keep calm, very calm. Think only quiet, composed thoughts.
"Of course," she laughed weakly.
"What could there be to upset me?"
"That is good," Theodrin said serenely. "Today I mean to try something a little more direct."
Nynaeve glanced at her. "No questions? No accusations?" The way this day had been going, she could not believe she was getting off so lightly.
Neither saw the woman watching them from a second-story window.
Chapter 13. Under the Dust. Wondering whether to undo her braid, Nynaeve glowered out from under a frayed red-striped towel at her dress and shift, hanging over chairbacks and dripping on the clean-swept floorboards. Another raveled towel, striped green and white and considerably larger, served her as a substitute garment.
"Now we know shock doesn't work," she growled at Theodrin, and winced. Her jaw hurt, and her cheek still stung.
Theodrin had quick reflexes and a strong arm.
"I could channel now, but for a moment there, Saidar was the furthest thing from my mind."
In that drenched moment of gasping for breath, when thought had fled and instinct had taken over.
"Well, channel your things dry," Theodrin muttered.
It made Nynaeve's jaw feel better, watching Theodrin peer into a broken triangle of mirror and finger her eye. The flesh looked a little puffy already, and Nynaeve suspected that left alone the bruise would be spectacular. Her own arm was not so weak. A bruise was the least Theodrin deserved. Perhaps the Damani thought the same because she sighed.
"I won't try that again. But one way or another I will teach you to surrender to Saidar without first being angry enough to bite it."
Frowning at the soaked garments, Nynaeve considered a moment. She had never done anything like this before. The prohibition against doing chores with the power was strong, and with good reason. Saidar was seductive. The more you channeled, the more you wanted to channel, and the more you wanted to channel, the greater the risk that eventually you would draw too much and still or kill yourself. The sweetness of the true source filled her easily now. Theodrin's bucket of water had seen to that, if the rest of the morning had not. A simple weave of water drew all the moisture from her clothes to fall on the floor in a puddle that quickly spread to join what the bucket had put there.
"I'm not very good at surrendering," she said, "unless there was no point in fighting anyway. Only a fool went on where there was no chance at all." She could not breathe under water, she could not fly by flapping her arms, and she could not channel except when angry.
Theodrin shifted her frown from the puddle to Nynaeve and planted fists on slim hips.
"I'm well aware of that," she said in a too-level tone. "By all I've been taught, you should not be able to channel at all. I was taught you must be calm to channel, cool and serene inside, open and utterly yielding."
The glow of Saidar surrounded her, and flows of water gathered the puddle into a ball sitting incongruously on the floor.
"You must surrender before you can guide. But you, Nynaeve, however hard you try to surrender, and I've seen you try, you hang on with your fingernails unless you're furious enough to forget to."
Flows of air lifted the wobbling ball. For a moment, Nynaeve thought the other woman meant to toss it at her, but the watery sphere floated across the room and out one of the open windows. It made a great splash falling, and a cat screamed in startled fury. Perhaps the prohibition did not apply when you reached Theodrin's level.
"Why not leave it at that?"
Nynaeve tried to sound bright, but she thought she failed. She wanted to channel whenever she pleased. But as the old saying went, if wishes were wings, pigs would fly.
"No use wasting..."
Leave that, Theodrin said as Nynaeve started to use the weave of water on her hair. Let go of Sidar and allow it to dry naturally, and put on your clothes. Nynaeve's eyes narrowed. You don't have another surprise waiting, do you? No. Now start preparing your mind. You are a flower bud feeling the warmth of the source, ready to open to that warmth. Sidar is the river, you the bank. The river is more powerful than the bank, yet the bank contains and guides it. Empty your mind except for the bud. There is nothing in your thoughts but the bud. You are the bud. Pulling her shift over her head, Nynaeve sighed as Theodrin's voice droned on hypnotically. Novice exercises. If those worked with her, she would have been channeling whenever she wanted long ago. She should stop this and see to what she really could do, such as convincing Elaine to go to Camelon. But she wanted Theodrin to be successful, even if it entailed 10 buckets of water. Accepted did not walk out. Accepted did not defy. She hated being told what she could not do, even worse than being told what she must. Hours passed, with them now seated, facing one another across a table that looked to have come out of a ramshackle farmhouse. Hours of repeating drills that the novices were probably doing right that moment. The flower bud, and the river bank, the summer breeze, and the babbling brook. Nynaeve tried to be a dandelion seed floating on the wind, the earth drinking in spring rain, a root inching its way through the soil, all without result, or at least the result Theodrin wanted. She even suggested Nynaeve imagine herself in a lover's arms, which turned out a disaster, since it made her think of Lan and how dare he vanish like this. But every time frustration sparked anger like a hot coal in dry grass and put Sidar in her grasp, Theodrin made her release it and start again, soothing, calming. The way the woman remained fixed on what she wanted was maddening. Nynaeve thought she could teach mules how to be stubborn. She never got frustrated. She had serenity down to an art. Nynaeve wanted to upend a bucket of cold water over her head and see how she liked it. Then again, considering the ache in her jaw, maybe that was not such a good idea. Theodrin healed that ache before Nynaeve left, which was about the extent of her abilities in that talent. After a moment, Nynaeve gave healing in return. Theodrin's eye had turned a brilliant purple, and she really hated not leaving it to remind the woman to have a little care what she did in the future. But turnabout was fair, and Theodrin's gasping shivers as the flows of spirit, air, and water ran through her were some recompense for Nynaeve's own gasps when that bucket had emptied over her. Of course, she shivered too at her own healing, but you could not have everything. Outside, the sun stood halfway down toward the western horizon. Down the street, a ripple of bows and curtsies moved through the crowd, and then the shifting throng opened to reveal Tarna Fear, gliding along like a queen walking through a pigsty, the red-fringed shawl looped over her arms like a blatant banner. Even at 50 paces her attitude was plain in the way she held her head, the way she kept her skirts out of the dust, the way she ignored even those making courtesy as she passed. The first day there had been many fewer courtesies and much more bluster, but an Aes Sedai was an Aes Sedai, to the sisters in Salidar anyway. To drive that home, 2 accepted, 5 novices, and near 12 serving men and women were spending what would have been their free hours hauling kitchen garbage and chamber pot emptyings out to the woods and burying them. As Nynaeve slipped away before Tarna could see her in turn, her stomach growled loudly enough for a fellow with a basket of turnips on his back to give her a startled look. Breakfast time had gone in Elaine's attempt to pierce the ward, the midday meal in Theodrin's exercises. And she was not finished with the woman today. Theodrin's instructions had been not to sleep tonight. Perhaps exhaustion would work where shock had not. Any block can be broken, Theodrin had said, her voice all implacable confidence. And I will break yours. It only takes once. One time channeling without anger, and Sidar will be yours. At the moment all Nynaeve wanted to be hers was some food. The scullions were already cleaning up, of course, and almost done, but the smell of mutton stew and roast pig hanging around the kitchens made her nose twitch. She had to settle for 2 pitiful apples, a bit of goat cheese, and a heel of bread. The day was not getting any better. Back in their room, she found Elaine sprawled atop her bed. The younger woman glanced at her without raising her head, then rolled her eyes back up to stare at the cracked ceiling.
"I have had the most miserable day, Nynaeve," she sighed. "Esmeralda insists on learning to make Turangrial when she isn't strong enough, and Varalyn did something, I don't know what, and the stone she was working on turned into a ball of, well, it wasn't quite flame, right in her hands. Except for Dagdara, I think she'd have died. No one else there could have healed her, and I don't think there was time to fetch someone who could. Then I was thinking about Maragon. If we can't learn how to detect a man channeling, maybe we can learn to detect what he's done. I seem to remember Moiraine implying that was possible. I think I do. Anyway, I was thinking about her and somebody touched me on the shoulder and I screamed like I'd been stuck with a needle. It was just some poor carter wanting to ask me about a fool rumor, but I frightened him so he nearly ran." She drew breath finally, and Nynaeve abandoned the notion of throwing her last apple core at her and darted into the momentary quiet. "Where is Maragon?" "She was finished tidying, and took her time about it, too, so I sent her off to her own room. I am still wearing the bracelet. See?" She waved her arm in the air and let it fall back to the mattress, but the flow of words did not slow. "She was going on in that awful whining way about how we should run off to Camelin, and I just could not stand it another minute, not on top of everything else. My novice class was a disaster. That horrible Keatlin woman, the one with the nose, kept muttering about how she'd never let a girl order her around back home, and Faelaine came stalking up demanding to know why I had Nicola in the class. How was I supposed to know Nicola was meant to be running errands for her? Then Ibrella decided to see how big a flame she could make, and nearly set the whole class on fire, and Faelaine dressed me down right in front of everybody for not keeping my class under control, and Nicola said she..." Nynaeve gave up trying to get a word in edgewise. Maybe she should have thrown the apple core, and just shouted, "I think Mogedion's right!" That name shut the other woman's mouth, and sat her up staring, too. Nynaeve could not help looking around to see if anyone had overheard, even if they were in their own room. "That is foolish, Nynaeve." Nynaeve did not know whether Elaine meant the suggestion or speaking Mogedion's name aloud, and she did not intend to inquire. Sitting on her own bed opposite Elaine, she adjusted her skirts. "No, it isn't. Any day now, Jarl and Sieve will tell somebody Maragon isn't their mother if they haven't already. Are you ready for the questions that will bring? I'm not. Any day, some Aes Sedai is going to start digging into how I can discover anything without being in a fury from sunup to sundown. Every second Aes Sedai I speak to mentions it, and Dagdara has been looking at me in a funny way lately. Besides, they aren't going to do anything here but sit, unless they decide to go back to the tower. I sneaked up and listened to Tarna talking with Shiriam." "You what?"
"I sneaked up and listened," Nynaeve said levelly. "The message they're sending to Elaida is that they need more time to consider. That means they're at least considering forgetting about the Red Aja and Loghain. How they can, I don't know, but they must be. If we stay here much longer, we may end up handed to Elaida as a present. At least if we go now, we can tell Rand not to count on any Aes Sedai being behind him. We can tell him not to trust any Aes Sedai." Frowning prettily, Elaine folded her legs beneath her.
"If they're still considering, it means they haven't decided. I think we should stay. Maybe we can help them decide the right way. Besides, unless you mean to talk Theodrin into coming along, you'll never break through your block if we go."
Nynaeve ignored her. A fine lot of good Theodrin had done so far. Buckets of water, no sleep tonight. What next? The woman had as good as said she meant to try anything and everything until she found what worked. Anything and everything took in too much to Nynaeve's way of thinking. Help them decide? They won't listen to us. Swan hardly listens to us, and if she has us by the scruff of the neck, we at least have her by the toe.
"I still think we should stay, at least until the hall does decide. Then if worst comes to worst, we can at least tell Rand a fact and not a maybe."
"How are we supposed to find out? We can't count on me finding the right window to listen at twice. If we wait until they announce it, we may be under guard. Me, at least. There isn't an Aes Sedai doesn't know Rand and I both come from Emmons Field.
Swan will tell us before anything is announced, the fool girl said calmly. You don't think she and Lyanna will go meekly back to Elida, do you?
There was that. Elida would have Swan and Lyanna's heads before they could curtsy.
That still doesn't consider Jarl and Sieve, she persisted.
We will think of something. In any case, they aren't the first refugee children cared for by somebody not related to them.
Elaine probably thought her dimpled smile was reassuring.
All we need do is put our heads to it. At the very least, we should wait for Tom to return from Amadicia. I cannot leave him behind.
Nynaeve threw up her hands.
If looks reflected character, Elaine should have looked like a mule carved in stone. The girl had made Tom Marilyn a replacement for the father who died when she was little. She also sometimes seemed to think he could not find his way to the dinner table unless she held his hand.
The only warning Nynaeve had was the feel of Sidar being embraced close by. Then the door swung open on a flow of air, and Tarna Fear stepped into the room.
Nynaeve and Elaine popped to their feet. An Aes Sedai was an Aes Sedai, and some of those burying refuse were there on Tarna's word alone.
The yellow-haired red sister scrutinized them, her face arrogant winter marble.
So, the Queen of Andor and the crippled Wilder.
Not yet, Aes Sedai, Elaine replied with a cool politeness. Not until I am crowned in the Great Hall, and only if my mother is dead, she added.
Tarna's smile could have frozen a snowstorm.
Of course. They tried to keep you a secret, but whispers do get about.
Her gaze took in the narrow beds and the rickety stool, the clothes on their wall pegs and the cracked plaster.
I should think you would have better quarters, considering all the miraculous things you've done. Were you in the White Tower where you belong, I would not be surprised to see you both tested for the shawl by now.
Thank you. Nynaeve said, to show she could be as civil as Elaine.
Tarna looked at her. Those blue eyes made the rest of that face seem warm.
Aes Sedai, Nynaeve added hastily.
Tarna turned back to Elaine.
The Ammerlin has a special place in her heart for you, and for Andor. She has such a search being made for you as you would not believe. I know it would please her greatly if you returned with me to Tar Valon.
My place is here, Aes Sedai.
Elaine's voice was still pleasant, but her chin came up in a good match to Tarna's haughtiness.
I will return to the tower when the rest do.
I see, the Red said flatly. Very well. Leave us now. I wish to speak to the Wilder alone.
Nynaeve and Elaine exchanged glances, but there was nothing for Elaine to do but curtsy and go.
When the door closed, a startling change came over Tarna. She sat on Elaine's bed and swung her legs up, crossing her ankles, leaning back against the chipped headboard, and folding her hands on her stomach. Her face thawed, and she even smiled.
You look uneasy. Do not be. I will not bite you.
Nynaeve could have believed that better if the other woman's eyes had changed, too. The smile never touched them. In contrast, they seemed 10 times as hard, 100 times as cold. The combination made her skin crawl.
I am not uneasy, she said stiffly, planting her feet to keep them from shifting.
Ah, offended, is it? Why?
Because I called you Wilder? I'm a Wilder, too, you know. Galena Caspan beat my block out of me herself. She knew my Aja long before I did, and took a personal interest in me. She always does in those she thinks will choose red.
She shook her head, laughing, eyes like frozen knives.
The hours I spent howling and weeping before I could find Sidar without my eyes shut tight. You cannot weave if you cannot see the flows. I understand Theodrin is using gentler methods with you.
Nynaeve's feet moved in spite of herself.
Surely Theodrin would not try that.
Surely not. Stiffening her knees did nothing for the flutter in her stomach. So she was not supposed to be offended, was she? Was she to dismiss crippled, too?
What did you wish to speak to me about, Aes Sedai?
The Ammerlin wants to see Elaine safe, but in many ways you are every bit as important, perhaps more. What you have in your head of Randall Thor could be beyond price, and what Egwene Alvear has in hers. Do you know where she is?
Nynaeve wanted to wipe the sweat from her face, but she kept her hands by her sides.
I have not seen her in a long time, Aes Sedai. Months since their last meeting in Tel Iron Riod.
May I ask, what does...
No one in Salidar called Elaida Ammerlin, but she was supposed to be respectful to this woman.
The Ammerlin intend about Rand?
Intend, child? He's the dragon reborn. The Ammerlin knows that, and she intends to give him every honor he deserves.
A touch of intensity entered Tarna's voice.
Think, child. This lot will return to the fold once it dawns on them fully what they do, but every day could be vital. 3,000 years the White Tower has guided rulers. There would have been more wars and worse without the Tower. The world faces disaster if Althor lacks that guidance. But you cannot guide what you do not know, any more than I could channel with my eyes closed. The best thing for him is for you to return with me and give your knowledge of him to the Ammerlin now, instead of in weeks or months. Best for you as well. You can never be made Aes Sedai here. The oath rod is in the tower. The testing can only be done in the tower.
Sweat stung Nynaeve's eyes, but she refused to blink. Did the woman think she could be bribed?
The truth of it is, I never spent much time around him. I lived in the village, you see, and he on a farm off in the Westwood. Mainly all I remember is a boy who never listened to reason. He had to be pushed into doing what he should, or dragged into it. Of course, that was when he was a boy. He may have changed, for all I know. Most men are just the boy grown tall, but he could have.
For a long moment, Tarna merely looked at her. A very long moment under that frigid stare.
Well, she said at last, and flowed onto her feet so quickly Nynaeve almost stepped back, though there was nowhere in the tiny room to step back to. That unsettling smile remained in place.
Such an odd group gathered here. I haven't seen either, but I understand Swan Sanche and Liana Sharif grace Salidar. Not the sort of wise woman would consort with.
And perhaps other odd folk, too?
You would do much better to come with me.
I leave in the morning. Let me know tonight whether I should expect to meet you on the road.
I'm afraid not, think on it, child.
This could be the most important decision you ever make. Think very hard.
The amiable mask vanished, and Tarna swept out of the room.
Nynaeve's knees gave way, depositing her on the bed. The woman set such a gamut of emotions running through her she did not know what to make of them. Uneasiness and anger roiled about with exhilaration. She wished the Red had some way to communicate with the Tower Aes Sedai seeking Rand. Oh, to be a fly on the wall when they tried using her assessment of him. Trying to bribe her, trying to frighten her, and doing a fair job of the latter. Tarna was so sure the Aes Sedai here would kneel to Elaida. It was a foregone conclusion, only the timing in doubt. And had that been a hint about Loghain? Nynaeve suspected Tarna knew more of Salidar than the Hall or Shiriam suspected. Perhaps Elaida did have supporters here. Nynaeve kept expecting Elaine to return, and when a good half hour passed without her, she went out hunting, first loping up and down dusty streets, then trotting, pausing here to climb up on a cart tongue, there to mount an upended barrel or a stone stoop, and peer across the heads of the crowd. The sun descended to less than its own height above the tree line before she stalked back to the room, muttering to herself, and found Elaine, plainly just arrived herself.
"Where have you been? I thought Tarna might have you tied up somewhere."
"I was getting these from Swan." Elaine opened her hand. Two of the twisted stone rings lay on her palm.
"Is one of those the real one? It's a good idea to take them, but you should have tried to get the real one."
"Nothing has changed my mind, Nynaeve. I still think we should stay.
Tarna only convinced me. If we go, Shiriam and the Hall will choose the tower whole over Rand. I just know it."
She put her hands on Nynaeve's shoulders, and Nynaeve let herself be sat down on her bed. Elaine took the other opposite her and leaned forward intently.
"You remember what you told me about using need to find something in Telairan Riod? What we need is a way to convince the Hall not to go to Elida."
"How? What? If low gain isn't enough..."
"We will know what when we find it," Elaine said firmly.
Nynaeve fingered her wrist-thick braid absently.
"Will you agree to go if we don't find anything? I don't much like the thought of sitting here until they decide to put us under guard."
"I'll agree to go, provided you agree to stay if we do find something useful. Nynaeve, as much as I want to see him, we can do more good here."
Nynaeve hesitated before finally muttering, "Agreed." It seemed safe enough. Without some idea of what they were looking for, she could not imagine they would find anything at all.
If the day had seemed to pass slowly before, it began to crawl now. They lined up at one of the kitchens for plates of sliced ham, turnips, and peas. The sun sat on the treetops for hours, it seemed. Most in Salidar went to bed with the sun, but a few lights appeared in windows, especially the little tower. The Hall was feasting Tarna tonight. Bits of harp music occasionally drifted from the former inn. The Aes Sedai had found a harper of sorts among the soldiers and had him shaved and stuffed into something like livery. People passing by in the street darted quick glances at it before hurrying on, or ignored it so hard they practically shook with the effort. Once again, Gareth Bryn was the exception. He ate his meals seated on a wooden box in the middle of the street. Any of the Hall looking out a window would have to see him. Slowly, ever so slowly, the sun slid down behind the trees. Dark came abruptly, with no twilight to speak of, and the streets emptied. The harper's melody began again. Gareth Bryn still sat on his box on the edge of a pool of light from the Hall's banquet. Nynaeve shook her head. She did not know whether he was being admirable or foolish. Some of each, she suspected. It was not until she was in her bed with the flecked stone Turangrial on the cord around her neck with Lan's heavy gold signet and the candle snuffed that she remembered Theodrin's instructions. Well, too late for that now. Theodrin would never know whether she slept anyway. Where was Lan? The sound of Elaine's breathing slowed. Nynaeve snuggled into her small pillow with a tiny sigh, and... she stood at the foot of her empty bed, looking at a misty Elaine in the not-quite-light of night in Telairan Riod. No one to see them here. Shiriam or one of her circle might be about, or Swan or Lyanna. True, the pair of them had a right to visit the world of dreams, but on tonight's quest, neither wanted to answer questions. Elaine apparently saw it as a hunt. Consciously or not, she had togged herself out like Birgitta, in green coat and white trousers. She blinked at the silver bow in her hand, and it vanished along with the quiver. Nynaeve checked her own garments and sighed. A blue silk ball gown, embroidered with golden flowers around the low neckline and entwined lines down the full skirt. She could feel velvet dancing slippers on her feet. What you wore in Telairan Riod did not really matter, but whatever had possessed her mind to choose this? "You realize this might not work," she said, changing to good plain Two Rivers woolens and stout shoes. Elaine had no right to smile that way. A silver bow. Ha! "We're supposed to have some idea, at least, of what we're looking for. Something about it."
"It will have to do, Nynaeve. According to you, the Wise Ones said, the stronger the need, the better. And we surely need something, or the help we promised Rand is going to vanish except for whatever Elida is willing to give. I won't let that happen, Nynaeve. I will not."
"Put your chin down. Neither will I, if there's anything we can do about it. We might as well get on with this."
Linking hands with Elaine, Nynaeve closed her eyes. Need. She hoped some part of her had some notion what it was they needed. Maybe nothing would happen. Need. Suddenly everything seemed to slide around her. She felt Telairan Riod tilt and swoop. Her eyes sprang open immediately. Each step using need was taken blind, of necessity, and while each took you closer to what you sought, any one could drop you down in a pit of vipers, or a lion disturbed at its kill could bite your leg off.
There were no lions, yet what there was disturbing. It was bright midday, but that did not bother her. Time flowed differently here. She and Elaine were holding hands in a cobblestone street, surrounded by buildings of brick and stone. Elaborate cornices and friezes decorated houses and shops alike. Ornate cupolas decorated tile rooftops, and bridges of stone or wood arched across the street, sometimes 3 or 4 stories up. Heaps of garbage, old clothes, and broken furniture stood piled on street corners, and rats scurried about by the score, sometimes pausing to chitter fearless challenges at them. People dreaming themselves to the brink of Telairan Riad flickered in and out of existence. A man fell shrieking from one of the bridges and vanished before he hit the cobblestones. A howling woman in a torn dress ran a dozen paces toward them before she too winked out. Truncated screams and shouts echoed through the streets, and sometimes coarse laughter with a maniacal edge. "I don't like this," Elaine said in a worried tone. In the distance, a great bone-white shaft reared above the city, far overtopping other towers, many of them linked by bridges that made those where they were seem low. They were in Tar Valon, in the part where Nynaeve had caught a glimpse of Lyanna last time. Lyanna had not been very forthcoming about what she'd been doing, increasing the awe and legend of the mysterious Aes Sedai, she had claimed with a smile. "It doesn't matter," Nynaeve said stoutly. "Nobody in Tar Valon even knows about the world of dreams. We won't run into anybody." Her stomach turned over as a bloody-faced man suddenly appeared, staggering toward them. He had no hands, only spurting stumps. "That was not what I meant," Elaine muttered. "Let's be on about it." Nynaeve closed her eyes. "Need. Shift." They were in the tower, in one of the tapestry-hung curving hallways. A plump, novice-clad girl popped into existence not 3 paces away, her big eyes going wider when she saw them. "Please," she whimpered. "Please," and was gone. Suddenly Elaine gasped. "Egwene!" Nynaeve whirled around, but the passage was empty. "I saw her," Elaine insisted. "I know I did." "I suppose she can touch Telairan Riad in an ordinary dream like anyone else," Nynaeve told her. "Let's just get on with what we're here for." She was beginning to feel more than uneasy. They linked hands again. Need. Shift. It was not an ordinary storeroom. Shelves lined the walls and made 2 short rows out in the floor, neatly lined with boxes of various sizes and shapes, some plain wood, some carved or lacquered, with things wrapped in cloth, with statuettes and figurines and peculiar shapes seemingly of metal or glass, crystal or stone, or glazed porcelain. Nynaeve needed no more to know they must be objects of the One Power, Turangreal most likely, perhaps some Angreal and Saangreal. Such a disparate collection, stored away so tidily, could not be anything else in the tower. "I don't think there is any point to going further here," Elaine said dejectedly. "I don't know how we could ever get anything out of here." Nynaeve gave her braid a short tug. If there really was something here they could use, there had to be, unless the wise ones had lied, then there had to be a way to reach it in the waking world. Angreal and the like were not heavily guarded, usually when she had been in the tower only by a lock and a novice. The door here was made of heavy planks with a heavy black iron lock set in it. No doubt it was fastened, but she fixed it in her mind as undone and pushed. The door swung open into a guard room. Narrow beds stacked one atop another lined one wall, and racked halberds lined another. Beyond a heavy, battered table ringed by stools was another door, iron-strapped, with a small grille set in it. As she turned back to Elaine, she was suddenly aware that the door was shut again. "If we can't get to what we need here, maybe we can somewhere else. I mean, maybe something else will do. At least we have a hint now. I think these are Turangreal nobody has found how to use yet. That's the only reason they would be guarded like this. It could be dangerous even to channel close to them." Elaine gave her a wry look. "But if we try again, won't it just bring us right back here? Unless the wise ones told you how to exclude a place from the search.
They had not. They had not been eager to tell her anything at all. But in a place where you open a lock by thinking it was open, anything should be possible. That's exactly what we do. We fix it in our heads that what we want isn't in Tarvalin. Frowning at the shelves, she added, "And I'll wager it is a Turangrial nobody knows how to use." Though how that would convince the hall to support Rand, she could not imagine. "We need a Turangrial that isn't in Tarvalin," Elaine said, as if convincing herself. "Very well. We go on." She held out her hands, and after a moment, Nynaeve took them. Nynaeve was not sure how she had become the one to insist on continuing. She wanted to leave Salidar, not find a reason to stay. But if it assured that the Salidar Aes Sedai would support Rand... Need. A Turangrial. Not in Tarvalin. Need. Shift. Wherever they were, the dawn-lit city was certainly not Tarvalin. Not 20 paces away, the broad paved street became a white stone bridge with statues at either end, arching over a stone-lined canal. 50 paces the other way stood another. Slender, balcony-ringed towers stood everywhere, like spears driven through round slices of ornate confection. Every building was white, the doorways and windows large pointed arches, sometimes double or triple arches. On the grander buildings, long balconies of white-painted wrought iron, with intricate wrought iron screens to hide any occupants, looked down on the streets and canals, and white domes banded with scarlet or gold rose to points as sharp as the towers. Need. Shift. It might as well have been a different city. The street was narrow and unevenly paved, hemmed in on both sides by buildings 5 and 6 stories high, their white plaster flaked away in many places to expose the brick beneath. There were no balconies here. Flies buzzed about, and it was hard to say whether it was still dawn because of the shadows down on the ground. They exchanged looks. It seemed unlikely they would find a Turangrial here, but they had gone too far to stop now. Need. Shift. Nynaeve sneezed before she could open her eyes, and again as soon as they were open. Every shift of her feet kicked up swirls of dust. This storeroom was not at all like that in the tower. Chests, crates, and barrels crowded the small room, piled every which way atop one another with barely an aisle left between, and all under a thick layer of dust. Nynaeve sneezed so hard she thought her shoes would come off, and the dust vanished. All of it. Elaine wore a small, smug smile. Nynaeve said nothing, only fixed the room firmly in her mind without dust. She should have thought of that. Looking over the jumble, she sighed. The room was no larger than the one where their bodies lay sleeping in Salidar, but searching through all that... It will take weeks. We could try again. It might at least show which things to look through. Elaine sounded as doubtful as Nynaeve felt. Still, it was as good a suggestion as any. Nynaeve closed her eyes, and once more came the shift. When she looked again, she was standing at the end of the aisle away from the door, facing a square wooden chest taller than her waist. The iron straps seemed all rust, and the chest itself looked to have spent the last 20 years being beaten with hammers. A less likely repository for anything useful, especially a Turangrial, Nynaeve could not imagine. But Elaine was standing right beside her, staring at the same chest. Nynaeve put a hand on the lid. The hinges would open smoothly, and pushed it up. There was not even the hint of a squeal. Inside, 2 heavily rusted swords and an equally brown breastplate with a hole eaten through it lay atop a tangle of cloth-wrapped parcels and what seemed to be the refuse from somebody's old clothes press and a couple of kitchens. Elaine fingered a small kettle with a broken spout. Not weeks, but the rest of the night anyway. One more, Nynaeve suggested. It could not hurt. Elaine shrugged. Eyes shut. Need. Nynaeve reached out, and her hand came down on something hard and rounded, covered with crumbling cloth. When she opened her eyes, Elaine's hand was right next to hers. The younger woman's grin nearly split her face in two. Getting it out was not easy. It was not small,
and they had to shift tattered coats and dented pots and parcels that crumbled to reveal figurines and carved animals and all sorts of rubbish. Once they had it out, they had to hold it between them, a wide, flattish disc wrapped in rotted cloth. With the cloth stripped away, it turned out to be a shallow bowl of thick crystal, more than 2 feet across and carved deeply inside with what appeared to be swirling clouds.
"Nynaeve," Elaine said slowly, "I think this is..."
Nynaeve gave a start and nearly dropped her side of the bowl as it suddenly turned a pale, watery blue and the carved clouds shifted slowly. A heartbeat later, the crystal was clear again, the carved clouds still. Only she was certain the clouds were not the same as they had been.
"It is," Elaine exclaimed. "It's a Tarangrial, and I will bet anything it has something to do with weather. But I'm not quite strong enough to work it by myself."
Gulping a breath, Nynaeve tried to make her heart stop pounding.
"Don't do that. Don't you realize you could still yourself meddling with the Tarangrial when you don't know what it does?"
The fool girl had the nerve to give her a surprised stare.
"That is what we came to look for, Nynaeve. And do you think there is anyone who knows more about Tarangrial than I do?"
Nynaeve sniffed. Just because the woman was right did not mean she should not have given a little warning. "I'm not saying it isn't wonderful if this can do something about the weather. It is. But I don't see how it can be what we need. This won't shift the hall one way or the other about Rand."
"What you need isn't always what you want," Elaine quoted. "Linny used to say that when she wouldn't let me go riding or climb trees, but maybe it holds here."
Nynaeve sniffed again. Maybe it did. But right now she wanted what she wanted. Was that so much to ask? The bowl faded out of their hands, and it was Elaine's turn to give a start, muttering about never getting used to that. The chest was closed, too.
"Nynaeve, when I channeled into the bowl, I felt... Nynaeve, it isn't the only Tarangrial in this room. I think there are Angrial, too. Maybe even Saangrial."
"Here?" Nynaeve said incredulously, staring around the cluttered little room. "But if one, why not two, or 10, or 100?
Light, don't channel again. What if you make one of them do something by accident? You could still..."
"I do know what I'm doing, Nynaeve. Really, I do. The next thing we have to do is find out exactly where this room is." That proved to be no easy task. Though the hinges seemed solid masses of rust, the door was no impediment. Not until Iranriod. The problems began after that. The dim, narrow corridor outside had only one small window at its end, and that showed nothing but a peeling, white-plastered wall across the street. Climbing down cramped flights of stone-faced stairs did no good. The street outside could have been the first they had seen in this quarter of the city, wherever that was. All the buildings as near alike as made no difference. The tiny shops along the street had no signs, and the only thing marking inns were blue-painted doors. Red seemed to indicate a tavern. Nynaeve strode off, searching for some landmark, something to pinpoint their location, something to say what the city was. Every street she came to seemed like the last, but she quickly found a bridge, plain stone, unlike the others she had seen, and lacking statues. The center of its arch showed her only the canal, meeting others in both directions, more bridges, more buildings with flaking white plaster. Suddenly she realized she was alone.
"Elaine!"
Silence except for the echo of her voice. "Elaine?
Elaine!"
The golden-haired woman popped around a corner near the foot of the bridge.
"There you are," said Elaine. "This place makes a rabbit warren look well planned. I turned my head for an instant and you were gone. Did you find anything?"
"Nothing." Nynaeve glanced down the canal again before joining Elaine. "Nothing at all useful."
"At least we can be sure where we are. Ebudar. It must be."
Elaine's short coat and wide trousers became a green silk gown with spills of lace dangling over her hands, a high, elaborately embroidered collar, and a narrow neckline deep enough to show considerable cleavage.
"I can't think of another city with so many canals except Ilion, and this is certainly not Ilion."
"I should hope not," Nynaeve said faintly. It had never even occurred to her that a blind search might take them into Samael's lair. Her own dress had changed, she realized, to a deep blue silk suitable for traveling, complete with a linen dust cloak. She made the cloak vanish, but left the rest.
You would like Ebudar, Nynaeve. Ebudari wise women know more about herbs than anybody. They can cure anything. They have to, because Ebudari fight duels over a sneeze, noble or common, men or women.
Elaine giggled.
Tom says there used to be leopards here, but they left because they found Ebudari too touchy to live with.
That's all very well, Nynaeve told her, but they can run each other through as much as they want for all I care. Elaine, we might as well have put the rings away and just slept. I couldn't walk back to that room from here if I was to receive the shawl when I got there. If only there was some way to make a map. She grimaced.
As well ask for wings in the waking world. If they could take a map out of Tel Iron-Riod, they could take the bowl.
Then we will just have to come to Ebudar and search, Elaine said firmly. In the real world. At least we know what part of the city to look in.
Nynaeve brightened. Ebudar lay only a few hundred miles down the Eldar from Salidar.
That sounds a very good notion, and it will get us away before everything falls on our heads.
Really, Nynaeve? Is that still the most important thing to you?
It is one important thing. Can you think of anything else to do here?
Elaine shook her head.
Then we might as well go back. I'd like a little real sleep tonight.
There was no telling how much time had passed in the waking world while you were in Tel Iron-Riod. Sometimes an hour there was an hour here, sometimes a day or more. Luckily, it did not seem to work the other way, or at least not as much anyway, or you might starve to death sleeping.
Nynaeve stepped out of the dream, and her eyes popped open, staring into her pillow, which was as sweat-damp as she. Not a breath of air stirred through the open window. Silence had fallen over Salidar, the loudest sound the thin cries of night herons. Sitting up, she untied the cord around her neck and unstrung the twisted stone ring, pausing for a moment to finger Lan's thick gold ring. Elaine stirred, then sat up yawning and channeled a stub of candle alight.
"Do you think it will do any good?" Nynaeve asked quietly.
"I do not know." Elaine stopped to muffle a yawn behind her hand. How could the woman manage to look pretty yawning, with her hair a mess and a red wrinkle from a pillow marring one cheek? That was a secret Aes Sedai ought to investigate.
What I do know is that bowl may be able to do something about the weather. I know a cache of Turangrial and Angrial has to be put in the right hands. It's our duty to hand them over to the hall, to Shiriam anyway. I know if it doesn't make them support Rand, I'll keep hunting until I find something that does. And I know I want to sleep. Could we talk about this in the morning?
Without waiting for an answer, she doused the candle, curled up again, and was breathing the deep, slow breaths of sleep as soon as her head hit the pillow. Nynaeve stretched out again, staring at the ceiling through the darkness. At least they would be on their way to Ebudar soon, tomorrow maybe, a day or two at most to ready themselves for the journey and stop a passing riverboat. At least... Suddenly she remembered Theodrin. If it took 2 days to get ready, Theodrin would want her 2 sessions, sure as a duck had feathers. And she expected Nynaeve not to sleep tonight. There was no possible way she could know, but... Sighing heavily, she climbed out of bed. There was not much room to pace, but she used it all, getting angrier by the minute. All she wanted was to get away. She had said she was not very good at surrendering, but maybe she was getting good at running away. It would be so wonderful to channel whenever she wanted. She never even noticed the tears that began leaking down her cheeks.
Chapter 14. Dreams and Nightmares. At the sight of Nynaeve and Elaine, Egwene did not step out of the dream. She leaped out. Not back to her sleeping body in Cairhien. The night was too young yet, but to a vast blackness filled with twinkling pinpricks of light, more by far than the number of stars in the clearest sky, each sharp and distinct as far as the eye could see.
If she had had eyes here, that was. Formless, she floated in the infinity between Telaranriod and the waking world, the narrow gap between dream and reality. Had she possessed a heart here, it would have been pounding like a mad drum. She did not think they had seen her, but what under the light were they doing there, in a part of the tower that held nothing of interest? On these nightly excursions, she carefully avoided the Ammerlin's study, the novices' quarters, even the accepted's quarters. It always seemed that if Nynaeve or Elaine or both were not in one of those places, someone else was. She could have approached Nynaeve or Elaine, of course. They certainly knew how to keep secrets, but something told her not to. She had dreamed of doing it, and it always seemed a nightmare. Not the sort that woke you in a cold sweat, but the kind that made you twist fretfully. Those other women. Did the Aes Sedai and Salidar know strangers wandered the tower in the world of dreams? Strange to her, at least. If they did not, she had no way to warn them, no way she could take. It was all so frustrating. The great spangled ocean of darkness swirled around her, seeming to move while she stood still. A fish at home in that ocean, she swam confidently, without really needing to think about it any more than the fish did. Those flickering lights were dreams, all the dreams of all the people of the world, of all worlds, places that were not quite the world she knew, worlds nothing like it at all. Varin Sedai first told her of those, the wise ones affirmed it was so, and she herself had glimpsed things peeking in that she simply could not credit, not even in a dream. Not nightmares, those always seemed washed in red or blue, or a murky gray like deep shadows, but filled with impossible things. Better to avoid them. Clearly she did not belong in those worlds. Peering into such a dream was like suddenly being surrounded by broken mirrors, everything whirling and no way to tell up from down. It made her want to empty her stomach, and if she did not have one here, she would again on stepping back into her body. Sicking up was no way to wake yourself. She had learned a few things alone like this, added to what the wise ones had taught her, even ventured where they would have barred the way. And yet, she had no doubt she would know more, much more, if she had had a dream walker looking over her shoulder. Telling her that this was too dangerous yet, and that forbidden altogether, true, yet suggesting what to try as well. Long past the simple things, easily puzzled out. Well, not exactly easily, never that. She had reached a point where she could reason the next step on her own, but they were steps the wise one dreamwalkers had taken long ago. What took her a month to master for herself, they could teach in a night, in an hour. When they decided she was ready. Never until then. It galled so, when all she wanted was to learn everything, right now. Each light looked identical to every other, yet she had learned to recognize a handful. How, exactly, she did not know, a thing that irked her no end. Even the wise ones did not know that. Still, once she identified which dream belonged to which person, she could find that person's dreams again like an arrow to the target, no matter if they went to the other side of the world. That light was Berylaine, the first of Mayenne, the woman Rand had put in charge of Kyrian. Looking into Berylaine's dreams made Egwene uncomfortable. Usually they were no different from any other woman's. Any woman interested equally in power, politics, and the latest fashion in dresses. But sometimes Berylaine dreamed of men, even men Egwene knew, in a way that made Egwene blush to remember. And that slightly muted glow over there was Rand, his dreams guarded behind a ward woven of Sidene. She almost stopped. It piqued her that something she could not see or feel could shut her out like a stone wall, but instead let it pass. Another night of futility held no attraction. This place skewed distance the way Telaranriod did time. Rand was sleeping in Caenlin, unless he had jaunted to Tyr, a thing she very much wanted to know how he did, but only a little way from his dream, Egwene picked out another light she recognized. There, in Kyrian, hundreds of leagues from Rand. Wherever Rand was, she knew for a fact it was not Kyrian this night. How did he do it?
The field of light streaked by as Egwene darted away from the Wise One's dream. Had she seen Amice and Melaine as well, she might not have fled. But if the other two dreamwalkers were not asleep and dreaming, they could be dreamwalking. One of them might be where she was, even ready to swoop down and haul her out of the dream, or into the dreamwalker's own dream. She doubted she could stop them, not yet. She would be at the other's mercy, just a part of her dream. Holding on to yourself inside someone else's dream was hard enough when the dreamer was an ordinary person with no idea what was going on, although no harder than getting out before they stopped dreaming of you, which they were unlikely to do before waking with you actually there in the dream. With a dreamwalker, as aware of her dreams as of the walking world, it was impossible, and that would be the best part of it. It dawned on her that she was being foolish. Running was useless. If Amice or Melaine had found her, she would be somewhere else already. For that matter, she could be racing right toward them. The rush of lights by her did not slow, it simply stopped dead. That was the way here. Vexed, she considered what to do next. Aside from teaching herself what she could of Tel Iron Riod, her main purpose here was to glean a few scraps of events in the world. At times it seemed the Wise Ones would not tell her whether the sun was up if she could not see for herself. They said she must not become agitated. How could she avoid it, fretting over what she did not know? That was what she had been doing in the White Tower, trying to pick up some hint of Elida's intentions. And Alviarin's. Hints were the best she had been able to find, and few of those. She hated not knowing. Ignorance was like suddenly going blind and deaf. Well, the whole tower was off her list now. It had to be when she could no longer be certain which parts were safe. The rest of Tarvalin had been struck off already, after the fourth time she nearly walked into a copper-skinned woman, this time nodding in satisfaction, as, of all things, she studied a stable that seemed freshly painted blue. Whoever she was, she had not dreamed herself into Tel Iron Riod for a moment by accident. She did not vanish the way a casual dreamer did, and she appeared made of mist. Using a Turang Rial, obviously, which meant she was almost certainly Aes Sedai. Egwene knew of only one Turang Rial that allowed access to the world of dreams without channeling, and Nynaeve and Elaine had that. The willowy woman had not been Aes Sedai long, though. Quite beautiful, and wearing a scandalously thin dress, she appeared Nynaeve's age, not ageless. Egwene might have tried following her. She might be Black Aja, after all. They had stolen Dream Turang Rial, but balancing the risk of being found out, even captured, against the fact that she could tell no one anything she learned, not until she could talk to Nynaeve and Elaine again, not unless she discovered something so dire that everything depended on it. After all, the Black Aja was Aes Sedai business. Quite aside from any other reasons for keeping secrets, she could not tell just anyone. It was no choice at all. Absently, she studied the nearest lights in the blackness. She did not recognize any of them. They held absolutely still around her, shimmering stars frozen in clear black ice. There were too many strangers in the world of dreams lately to suit her peace of mind. Two, but that was two too many. The copper-skinned woman and another, a sturdily pretty woman who moved with a purposeful stride, blue-eyed and with a determined face. The determined woman, as Egwene thought of her, must be able to enter Tel Iron Riod on her own. She seemed solid, not carved from fog. And whoever she was, for whatever reason she was there, she was about the tower more often than Nynaeve and Elaine and Shiriam and the rest put together. She seemed to appear everywhere. In addition to the tower, she had nearly surprised Egwene on her last trip to Tyr. Not on a meeting night, of course. The woman had been stalking about the heart of the stone, muttering to herself angrily, and she had been in Camelin on Egwene's last two trips. The chances the determined woman was Black Aja were as great as with the other, but then again either could be from Salidar, or both, though Egwene had never seen them together, or with anyone from Salidar. For that matter, either could be from the tower itself. Divisions enough there for one side to be spying on another, and sooner or later the Tower Aes Sedai would learn of Tel Iron Riod if they had not already.
The two strangers presented nothing but questions without answers. The only thing Egwene could think to do was avoid them. Of course, she tried to avoid everyone in the world of dreams of late. She had taken to looking over her shoulder, to thinking somebody was sneaking up behind her, to seeing things. She thought she had caught glimpses of Rand, of Perrin, even Lan, half seen out of the corner of her eye. Imagination, of course, or maybe the chance touch of their dreams, but on top of everything else it had her jumpy as a cat in a dog yard. She frowned, or would have, had she a face. One of those lights looked not familiar, she did not know it, but it seemed to attract her. Wherever her gaze shifted, it came back to that same sparkling pinpoint. Perhaps she could try finding Salidar again. That meant waiting for Nynaeve and Elaine to leave Telairun Riod. She knew their dreams by sight, of course. In her sleep, she thought with a silent giggle. And so far a dozen attempts to locate Salidar that way had produced as much result as trying to get through the ward around Rand's dreams. Distance and location here really bore no relation to anything in the waking world. Amis said there was no distance or location here. On the other hand, it was as good as any. Startlingly, the pinpoint her gaze kept returning to began to drift toward her, swelling until what had been a distant star quickly became a full white moon. A spark of fear lit inside her. Touching a dream, peeking inside, was easy. A finger to the surface of water, a touch so light that the water rose to the finger, but the surface was never broken. Yet it was all supposed to be at her volition. A dreamwalker sought the dream. The dream did not seek her. She willed it to go away, willed the starry scape to move. Only that one light moved, expanding to fill her vision with white light. Frantically, she tried to pull away. White light, nothing but white light, absorbing her. She blinked, staring in amazement. Around her stretched a forest of great white columns. Most of it seemed fuzzy, indistinct, especially what was far away. But one thing sharp and real was Gawain, trotting across the white-tiled floor toward her in a plain green coat. Anxiety and relief mingled on his face. It was nearly Gawain's face, anyway. Gawain might not be as gorgeous as his half-brother Galad, but he was still a handsome man. Yet this face seemed ordinary. She tried to move, and could not to any extent. Her back was to one of the columns, and chains held her wrists above her head. This must be Gawain's dream. Out of all those countless points of light, she had stopped near his, and somehow been drawn in. How was a question for later. Now she wanted to know why he would dream of holding her captive. Firmly she fixed the truth in her mind. This was a dream, someone else's dream. She was herself, not whatever it was he wanted her to be. She did not accept the reality of anything here. Nothing here touched the true her. Those truths repeated like a chant in her head. It made thinking of anything else difficult, but so long as she held them hard, she could risk staying. At least long enough to find out what peculiar oddities the man had rolling around in his head. Holding her captive! Abruptly, a huge gout of flame bloomed on the floor tiles, and acrid yellow smoke billowed. Rand stepped out of that inferno, garbed in gold-embroidered red like a king, facing Gawain, and the fire and smoke vanished. Only it hardly seemed Rand at all. The real Rand was of a height and size with Gawain, but this image overtopped Gawain by a head. The face was just vaguely Rand's, coarser and harder than it should be, the cold face of a murderer. This man wore a sneer. "You will not have her," he snarled. "You will not keep her," Gawain replied calmly, and suddenly both men held swords. Egwene gaped. Not Gawain holding her prisoner. He dreamed of rescuing her. From Rand. Time to leave this madness. She concentrated on being outside, back in the darkness, looking at this from the outside. Nothing happened. Swords met with a clash, and the two men danced a deadly dance. Deadly if it had not been a dream, anyway. It was all nonsense. Dreaming a sword fight, of all things. And it was not a nightmare. Everything looked normal, if fuzzy, not washed in color. "A man's dreams are a maze even he cannot know," Bear had told her once. Egwene closed her eyes, focused her entire mind. Outside. She was outside, looking in. No room for anything else in her head. Outside, looking in. Outside, looking in. Outside! She opened her eyes once more. The fight was reaching its climax. Gawain's blade drove into Rand's chest, and as Rand sagged, the steel pulled free, swept in a shining arc. Rand's head spun across the floor almost to her feet. It came to rest, staring up at her. A scream bubbled in her throat before she could quell it. A dream. Just a dream. But those dead, staring eyes seemed very real. Then Gawain was in front of her, sword back in its scabbard. Rand's head and body were gone. Gawain reached for the manacles holding her, and they were gone, too.
"I knew you would come," she breathed, and gave a start.
She was herself. She would not give in to this, not for a moment, or she would be well and truly trapped. Smiling, Gawain scooped her up into his arms.
"I'm glad you knew it," he said. "I would have come sooner if I could. I should never have left you in danger so long. Can you forgive me?"
"I can forgive you anything."
There were two Egwene's now, one snuggling contentedly in Gawain's arms as he carried her down a palace corridor lined with colorful tapestries and great mirrors in ornately gilded frames, the other riding in the back of the first's head. This was becoming serious. Concentrate as hard as she would on being outside, she stayed there, watching through the eyes of a second her. Hurriedly, she stifled curiosity as to what Gawain dreamed about her. That sort of interest was dangerous. She accepted none of this. But none of it changed. The corridor appeared quite real where she looked, though what was seen from the corner of her eyes seemed hazy. Her own image glimpsed in a mirror caught her attention. She would have twisted to stare at it as they passed, but she was only a passenger in the head of the woman of Gawain's dreams. The woman reflected for that instant had been her. There was no feature she could have pointed to and said it differed in the slightest from her real face, but somehow the whole was... beautiful was the only word. Stunningly so. Was that how Gawain saw her? No, no curiosity. Outside. Between one stride and the next, the corridor became a hillside carpeted in wildflowers, their scent rich on a soft breeze. The real Egwene gave a mental start. Had she done that? The barrier between her and the other thinned. She focused furiously. It was not real. She refused to accept it. She was herself. Outside. She wanted to be outside, looking in. Gently, Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside, in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth. Focusing on anything was very hard. She might have no control over the body she rode in, but she felt what it did, and his fingers seemed to make sparks jump.
"My heart is yours," he intoned softly. "My soul, my everything."
His coat was scarlet now, elaborately worked in gold leaves and silver lions. He made grand gestures, touching head or heart.
"When I think of you, there is no room for any other thought. Your perfume fills my brain and sets my blood afire. My heart pounds till I could not hear the world crack apart. You are my sun and my moon and my stars, my heaven and earth, more precious to me than life or breath or..."
Abruptly he stopped, grimacing.
"You sound a fool," he muttered to himself.
Egwene would have disagreed had she had any control over her vocal cords. It was very nice hearing those things, even if they were a bit over the top. Just a bit. When he grimaced, she felt a loosening, but... flick. Gently, Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth. She might have no control over the body she rode in, but she could feel what it felt, and his fingers seemed to make sparks jump. No! She could not let herself accept any part of his dream. His face was a map of pain, his coat stark gray. His hands rested on his knees in fists.
I have no right to speak to you as I might wish, he said stiffly. My brother loves you, and I know Galad is in agony with fear for you. He is a white cloak at least half because he thinks the Aes Sedai have misused you. I know he...
Gawain's eyes squeezed shut.
Oh, light, help me, he moaned. Flick.
Gently Gawain laid her down on a cloak already spread there on the hillside in the manner of things in dreams. Kneeling beside her, he brushed a strand of hair from her cheek, let his fingers trail back to the corner of her mouth.
No! She was losing the little control she had. She had to get out. What are you afraid of?
She was not sure whether that was her thought or the other Egwene's. The barrier between them was gauze now.
This is Gawain. Gawain!
I love you, he said hesitantly.
In the green coat again, still less handsome than he really was, he plucked at one of his buttons before letting his hand drop. He looked at her as though afraid of what he might see on her face, hiding it, but not well.
I have never said that to another woman, never wanted to say it. You have no idea how hard it is to say to you. Not that I don't want to, he added hastily, flinging a hand toward her. But to say it with no encouragement is like tossing aside my sword and baring my chest for a blade. Not that I think you would... Light! I can't say this properly. Is there any chance that you might come in time to feel some regard for me? Something more than friendship?
You sweet idiot, she laughed softly. I love you. I love you,
echoed in the part of her that was really her. She felt the barrier vanishing, had a moment to realize she did not care, and then there was only one Egwene again, an Egwene who happily twined her arms around Gawain's neck. Sitting on the stool in the dim moonlight, Nynaeve stuffed a yawn back into her mouth with her knuckles and blinked eyes that felt full of sand. This was going to work. Oh, yes, it was. She would fall asleep saying hello to Theodrin, if not before. Her chin sank, and she jerked herself to her feet. The stool had begun feeling like stone. Her bottom had gone numb, but that discomfort was apparently not enough anymore. Perhaps a walk outside. Arms outstretched, she felt her way to the door. Abruptly, a distant scream shattered the night, and as it did, the stool struck her hard in the back, knocking her against the rough door with a startled scream of her own. Stunned, she stared at the stool, lying on its side on the floor now, one leg shoved awry.
"What is it?"
Elaine cried, coming bolt upright in her bed. More screams and shouts sounded through Salidar, some from inside their own house, and a vague rumble and clatter that seemed to come from everywhere. Nynaeve's empty bed rattled, then slid a foot across the floor. Elaine's heaved, nearly tossing her out.
"A bubble of evil."
Nynaeve was startled at how cool she sounded. There was no point leaping about and flapping her arms, but inside she was doing just that. "We have to wake anybody who's still asleep." She did not know how anyone could sleep through this racket, but those who did could die before they knew it. Not waiting for a reply, she hurried out and pushed open the next door down the hall, and ducked as a white washbasin hurtled through the space where her head had been, to smash against the wall behind her. Four women shared this room, in two beds a little larger than her own. Now one bed lay with its legs in the air, two women trying to crawl from beneath it. On the other, Imara and Ranella, another accepted, thrashed and made choking sounds, wrapped tight in their own bedsheet. Nynaeve grabbed the first woman out from under the overturned bed, a gaping, skinny serving woman named Melinda, and shoved her toward the door.
"Go! Wake anybody in the house still sleeping and help anybody you can. Go!"
Melinda went, stumbling, and Nynaeve hauled her trembling sleeping companion to her feet.
"Help me, Satina. Help me with Imara and Ranella."
Trembling she might have been, but the plump woman nodded and set to with a will. It was not just a matter of unwinding the sheet, of course. The thing seemed alive, like a vine that would tighten until it crushed what it held. Nynaeve and Satina together barely peeled it away from the two women's throats. Then the pitcher leaped from the washstand to crash against the ceiling. Satina jumped and lost her hold, and the sheet snapped out of Nynaeve's hands, right back where it had been. The two women's struggles were weakening. One made a rattling noise in her throat, the other no sound at all. Even by the little moonlight that came through the window, their faces seemed swollen and dark. Seizing the sheet again with both hands, Nynaeve opened herself to Sayadar and found nothing.
"I'm surrendering, burn you! I am surrendering! I need the power!"
Nothing. The bed shimmied against her knees and Satina squeaked.
"Don't just stand there," Nynaeve snapped. "Help me."
Abruptly, the sheet jerked out of her grip once more, but instead of winding around Imara and Ronella again, it pulled the other way so hard they tumbled over one another, nearly blurring as it unwound. Noticing Elaine in the doorway, Nynaeve closed her mouth with a click of teeth. The sheet hung from the ceiling. The power, of course.
"Everybody's awake," Elaine said, handing her a robe. She already had one over her own shift. "A few bruises and scrapes, one or two nasty cuts to be seen to when there's time, and I think everybody is going to have bad dreams for a few days. But that's the extent of it. Here."
Screams and shouts still rang through the night. Satina jumped again as Elaine let the sheet fall, but it just lay there on the floor. The overturned bed shifted, though, creaking. Elaine bent over the groaning women on the bed.
"I think they're dizzy, mainly. Satina, help me get them on their feet."
Nynaeve glowered at the robe in her hands. Well, they might be dizzy, spun about like tops.
Light, but she was useless. Rushing in like a fool to take charge. Without the power, she was just useless.
"Nynaeve, could you give me a hand?"
Elaine held a swaying Imara upright, while Satina was more than half carrying Ronella to the door.
"I think Imara's going to sick up, and it better be outside. I think the chamber pots are broken."
The smell said she was right. Pottery grated against the floor, trying to slither out from under the overturned bed. Nynaeve thrust her arms angrily into her robe. She could sense the source now, a warm glow just out of sight, but she deliberately ignored it. She had done without the power for years. She could do without it now. Lifting Imara's free arm over her shoulder, she helped guide the moaning woman toward the street. They almost made it. When they got outside after wiping Imara's mouth, everyone else was already huddled together in front of the house, in robes or whatever they had slept in. The still full moon, hanging in a clear sky, gave a bright light. People were spilling out of the other houses in a bedlam of bellows and shrieks. One board in a fence rattled, then another. A bucket suddenly went bouncing down the street. A cart loaded with firewood abruptly rolled forward, shafts plowing shallow furrows in the hard ground. Smoke began to rise from a house down the way, and voices began shouting for water. The dark shape of someone lying in the street drew Nynaeve. One of the night watchmen, by the flickering lantern near his outstretched hand. She could see his staring eyes glittering in the moonlight, the blood covering his face, the dent in the side of his head where something had struck him like an axe. She felt his throat for a pulse anyway. She wanted to howl with fury. People should die after a long life, in their own beds, surrounded by family and friends. Anything else was waste. Pure, miserable waste.
"So you found Sayadar tonight, Nynaeve? Good."
Nynaeve jumped and stared up at Anaya. She did hold Sayadar, she realized, and useless even with it. Rising, she wearily dusted her knees and tried not to look at the dead man. If she had been quicker, could it have made a difference? The glow of the power surrounded Anaya, but not only her. The single light enveloped as well two more fully clothed Aes Sedai, an accepted in a robe, and three novices, two in their shifts. One of those in her shift was Nicola.
Nynaeve could see other glowing groups, dozens and dozens of them, moving in the street. Some seemed all Aes Sedai, but most not. "Open yourself to linking," Anaya went on. "And you, Elaine, and what is wrong with Emara and Ronella?" On learning they were just dizzy, she muttered something under her breath, then told them to find a circle and link with it as soon as their heads were steady. Hurriedly, she chose out four more accepted from the cluster around Elaine. "Samael, if it is him instead of one of the others, will learn we are far from helpless. Quickly now. Embrace the source, but hold yourself at the point of embracing. You are open and yielding.